Are listening to the Slash and Cast Podcast Network.
Massive furry snakes with the head of a cow. Boogeymen with hideous features and glowing red eyes. These boogeymen torment and devour children in the night. A society of mischievous, magical warlocks. Human beings twisted and broken into creatures so horrifying, locals dare not report the legend. Join us as we dive into folklore and cryptids from across Latin America. Welcome to another episode of the Cabinet of Dr. Mystery. I am your host, Dr. Mystery.
I tried to create living zombies.
Reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
All I gotta do is relax and they'll take me to their death.
Last chance to evacuate Earth before it is recycled.
This is a wicked, wicked world.
We are all evil in some form or another.
So before we begin, I just wanted to do my customary shout out to the beer that I'm drinking. And again today, we got a Stanley Park Brewing beer, Waypoint Hazy Pale Ale. It's a really good beer. I've had this one before. Stanley Park is amazing. I tried them this last month and I'm blown away. I'm going to continue to grab me some good Stanley Park beer. Damn, that is a good beer. In today's episode, we'll be taking another deep dive into various cryptids throughout Latin America. And for those of you who don't know, cryptozoologists, they are the ones who study cryptids. And the idea of cryptozoology is the study of animals whose existence has yet to be proven or disproven. In past episodes, we've spoken about winged cryptids such as the Ahul, the Ropin, and the Mothman, and those are great episodes. We had my good friend Hassan from the Nerd Alternative on for the Ahul and the Ropin episode, and that was a whole lot of fun. I think that's episode 14. Highly recommend that one. You know, a lot of people believe that cryptozoology is, you know, the stuff of vivid imaginations. How could massive pterodactyl-like creatures and human-sized gorillas with wings still exist, right? It's just unfathomable. But did you know that several species of animals that we know are in existence today, they were once thought to be cryptids? It's interesting stuff. Firstly, the Komodo dragon. One of my favorites. Really freaky, vicious lizard. And, you know, they thought that it was the stuff of legends at one time. And it wasn't confirmed to be a real species until the early 1900s. To my surprise, I found that kangaroos were once considered cryptids. And, you know, I can kind of see it. You know, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised. In 1499, Amerigo Vespucci described the kangaroo as a massive beast having, quote, the head of a fox, the hands of a man, the tail of a monkey, and a bag in which it carries its young. This is a pretty good description, pretty accurate. Like, it's a really freaky looking creature when you actually think about kangaroos. You know, if someone said that to me today, I'd be freaked out. I'd be a little worried. And then you add the fact that this creature, the kangaroo, it has humongous feet, like elongated feet, with razor sharp claws, and it hops around. I'm out. I'm done. I want nothing to do with that. I don't want anything to do with a kangaroo now. People think that kangaroos are cute and stuff, but have you ever seen it kick a human being? That is not cute. That thing will ruin you. Until the mid to late 1700s, the kangaroo was just a myth. It didn't exist. Like, it wasn't actually recorded as a new species. It was just this myth, this legend. Next up, the platypus. So this one I kind of knew about. This one I knew that people didn't really believe that it was a real thing. Many zoologists, they believed that the pelts that they found, or the pelts that were given to them of the platypus, they thought that these pelts and sketches of the animal, that they were a hoax. And I mean, if you think about it, it's essentially a beaver with a duck's bill. That's really what it is. And, you know, those people who studied this creature, they actually took the pelts that they had and they cut them up to find where the taxidermists had stitched on the beak. The zoologists were cutting these pelts up and trying to find stitching to see where the pelts of otters or beavers was, you know, the duck bill was sewn on there. Like, they didn't believe it at all. And I can totally see it. The platypus is a weird, freaky creature. You know, it's another case where it was believed to be a cryptid, a myth, a legend, and it turned out to be real. Before we dive into today's subject, I have one more cryptid mythological creature that was revealed to be real. This one's really interesting. I had never really heard about this creature until recently. The okapi is what I'm talking about. So if you haven't seen the okapi, it's basically a combination of a deer and a zebra and an antelope. It's a really interesting creature. It's like when you go and get a slushie and you combine three or four different flavors together, eventually they all just kind of blend together in like a swamp water slushie. I don't know if swamp water is universal. Swamp water is when you like you go out and you get like several different kinds of pop or whatever, and then it's just like a big mix of gross nonsense. I mean, the okapi is kind of beautiful in its own ugly way, but it's just a really weird looking thing. It's supposed to be related to the giraffe, but I don't really see that anyway. So, you know, the okapi, it was considered a cryptid, and some Europeans, they called it the African unicorn. It wasn't until the early 1900s that the creature was registered as a newly discovered species. And, you know, like I said, it's supposed to be the only known living relative of the giraffe, but I really don't see it. It's like, it's kind of like striped, but it looks like an antelope and a donkey had a baby with a zebra. It's just a weird looking creature. So, in addition to these cryptids that were revealed to not be cryptids, we could even talk about giant squids and gorillas, because those are once considered cryptids and now we know they're common things, right? But I think you guys get the idea. I think you folks get the idea. Cryptozoology is a legit study, and you know, sometimes it's tarnished by individuals within cryptozoology studying Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, because many, many people believe that those are myth and that they're not real. But then you have the idea that, you know, kangaroos and gorillas and all these other sorts of cryptid creatures, which are well known in society today. So I'm trying to look at everything that we discussed today as more than just a cryptid or more than just folklore, that there could be some truth to it. There are a few historical, like actual written evidence and written facts that were recorded throughout history about various creatures that we're going to discuss. And when this episode airs, you can look in the episode description and you'll find our different resources for these. But let's dive in. First off is El Culebron. And it sounds like, I feel like I'm giving it a French accent, like my Spanish is terrible. This creature is a giant hairy snake with the head of a cow or a horse. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was that many reports state that this creature has a mane on its back, like that of a lion's mane, but it extends outwards, almost like wings that propel the creature forward and help it to lift off the ground and take flight. So if you're watching the live episode right now, we have a picture of an artist's rendering of El Culebron, but the image kind of shows these massive feathered wings. So I'm trying to think of it more as a mane, but you could look at it as these wings could be hidden by the mane and the wings kind of extend outwards from within the mane. Chilean writer and folklorist Vicuña Cifuentes writes that some witnesses report the creature as being over 5 feet in length, and others report the creature as being over 6.5 feet in length. In some reports, the creature is said to have a head and snout on the tail as well. Others state that the creature has multiple heads on its sides and bristles along its head and back. The creature is said to survive off of the blood of goats, but if its appetite isn't satiated, El Culebrón will seek out newborns and will suck their blood. So the idea, I guess, is let this thing eat your cattle because you don't want it to eat your babies, I think, right? One thing I found really interesting about this was the creature would lure in cattle using the smell of its milk, and it would waft it in their direction. I don't know if it's using its wings or if it just uses the wind, but it would use this, the smell of its own milk, and it would lure cattle in who would, you know, the cattle would come to drink the milk, and the creature would then drain the cattle of their blood. Now, in some records, in some written, in some records, who cares? I read that this creature, it would also, like, there were some people that said that the creature would eat the cattle whole. So some people would say this thing would just drain it of its blood. Others would say it would eat it whole. So there's also like this, a little bit of recording history where they talk about different versions of the creature. So some people talk about it with a different name. But this is the idea of El Culebrón is specific to certain regions. This winged serpent was similar to the legend of dragons in the way that it was said to protect buried treasure. So after the treasure was buried, the creature would stand guard and protect the treasure like it was its own. And only the brave would dare face El Culebrón. One recorded historical event involving the creature was when it terrorized a village. El Culebrón devastated the countryside, devouring domestic animals and helpless people who tended their cattle in the fields close to the cave, which was the beast's lair. Another interesting eyewitness report states that the winged serpent that lives in caves and springs, its whistling can be heard at a great distance. It attacks and devours people and animals. So the whistling was something I didn't come across very often while researching, but I can imagine how terrifying a hairy snake whistling at you could be. Like, I don't know what kind of tune this thing was whistling. I don't know if it was like a happy tune. I'm just picturing this snake fully covered in hair and bristles, and it's just like whistling at you. Like, is it catcalling you? Is it like, come here, girl. You know, like, is it cat calling you, or is this thing whistling a sinister tune, or is it just like making, like, is it just like one, you know, like monotonous, like one monotone, just like, you know, like I'm trying to picture this snake whistling at people. I think I'm going to go with the snake is actually in construction gear and holding a jackhammer and whistling at women as they walk by. I think that's what's happening here. But besides my own vivid imagination, there's something really interesting about this creature. You can grow your own El Culebrón, your own Culebrón. So first, let me give you the instructions. Let me have a sip of this beer, and then let me give you the instructions on how to grow your own hairy snake. That sounds terrible. Sounds very suggestive. The hairy snake. It sounds terrible, but Let me take a sip of this beer and settle down here, and then we'll talk about how to grow your very own El Culebrón. So, step one, find a wild Culebrón, pluck some hairs from this massive hairy snake. So if you can get up that close to pull a couple hairs out of this thing, I feel like, you know, it sounds like an impossible task just to start off with. I feel like you'd be better off if you just found some of these hairs, right? I don't necessarily, if you see a massive hairy snake with wings and the head of a cow or a horse, you should stay away. Don't try this, but here's instructions on how you can do this. So pluck a few hairs from this massive snake. Take those hairs and put them in a bowl of milk. I don't know if it's 1% or 2%. I'd say go all the way, go 2%. Place those hairs in a bowl of milk. And then those hairs, they will grow and become Culebran babies. Once the babies are grown, the strongest will eat the weakest ones, and the last living baby will become your pet. You are now the proud owner of a massive furry snake. Now, you will need to feed your new pet, and you have two choices. You can feed your pet using animals, you know, sacrifice an animal, or if you're kind of vindictive and malicious like I am, you could feed him your least favorite relatives. That's right. My brother's actually in the other room. He's one of my favorites. So don't worry, Liam. You're fine. I'm not going to feed you to the snake. So once you do all of this, you take care of your baby snake and it grows and it's now your massive hairy winged snake. Once you do all of this, you're guaranteed riches. But if you fail, if you try this and you fail, you are guaranteed to be broke. And I'm just going to throw this out there. If you mess this up, if you mess up growing this massive creature, it's probably going to kill you. It's probably going to drain your blood. So you better be ready to give it all the blood that it needs. Otherwise, it's going to come for you. Just saying. So we could talk about El Culebran for forever and ever and ever. We could just sit here and talk about it because it's crazy. There's so many different legends. There's so many different eyewitness accounts. But we should move on and talk about the guy that is on your screen right now. Now, let's see if I can pronounce this correctly. El Cucuy. I think some people say El Cucuy, but I believe it's El Cucuy. There are other names. There's El Coco, El Cocoa. El Cucuy is the most popular. And actually, for those of you who are UFC fans, there's actually an MMA fighter that is named El Cucuy. So this creature that's on your screen right now, it's this hideous creature with glowing red eyes. It's crazy. That is a delicious beer. Let me just remind you, that Stanley Park Waypoint Hazy Pale Ale. It's great. You know, and I should say this to all the listeners that are out there. If you ever want to send me any beer, I'm down with that. If you ever want me to try any beer, you have some suggestions, let me know. I'll try them out. So El Cucuy is essentially the boogeyman, and the legend of El Cucuy has been used to discipline and terrorize children for generations. Like, it is a staple. This legend originates in Spain and Portugal. The legend of this monster was spread through another monster, colonization. In this urban legend, a hideous, hairy creature kidnaps children who misbehave. Described as having massive bat ears, rows of razor-sharp teeth, and glowing red eyes. El Cucuy will hide under your bed or in your closet, waiting till dark. Then he uses the shape of dark shadows to slink through your room. And it's said that El Cucuy can change and shapeshift into whatever shadow befalls in your room. It can just travel from shadow to shadow and shapeshift into that shadow. Then he pounces, dragging you to his lair in the mountains, where he devours you. Absolutely frightening. I can only imagine being a child and hearing this story. So I have some really interesting eyewitness stories, and I have some really interesting, there's actually a really cool song that I'll read to you here in a minute, but I read this one story that someone had posted on an online forum about their encounter with the creature, and I knew that I had to share it with y'all. You also have to excuse the humming. We finally turned the heat on in my apartment, and it turns out that it's not quiet. Who knew? So, this one story. Quote, I grew up in a small town in Mexico. My mother used to tell me ghost stories when I was a child, but none of them scared me as much as El Cucuy. One day, I was angry and I cursed at my mother. She got very quiet and she looked at me with fury burning in her eyes. Slowly and calmly, she said, El Cucuy, I'm not going to read that. My Spanish is terrible. I got to be honest with you. I'm learning Spanish. I'm in the process of learning it, but my accent is god awful. I am the whitest man in the history of the planet. So I won't butcher this, but I'll read you the English version. So this means El Cucuy is going to scratch your feet tonight. Something about the way she said it really scared me. That night, when I went to bed, it took me nearly 2 hours to fall asleep. The next morning, when I woke up, I got out of bed and noticed that my feet were sore. I looked down and saw that both of my feet had long red scratches on them. It truly terrified me because I didn't know if El Cucuy was real or if my mother was so crazy that she scratched up my feet while I was asleep to teach me a lesson. El Cucuy was a threat many parents would use to keep their kids in line. And throughout the years, the creature was described in many different ways, including that of resembling a wolf man, like a werewolf, a large reptilian creature, which I thought was really interesting because that's the first time I've read that he was a reptilian creature. Most accounts say that he's a very, very hairy guy. And one that I found really fascinating was that of simply a severed head. El Cucuy was simply a severed head. I don't know if this severed head would be floating in the air. I'm not sure exactly, but I thought that was really interesting. Just a floating severed head, like whatever his name is, the Ichabod Crane or the Headless Horseman, but it's not, there's no horse and there's no man. It's just the head. Now, many of us know the song Rockabye Baby, but what we don't know, or if we're ignorant white people like I am, what we don't know is that many parents from Latin America would sing the song, I'm going to butcher this, Dormite Niño, to the tune of Rockabye Baby. And again, I just remind you, I am learning Spanish, but my accent is absolutely horrendous. Some of my friends speak Spanish, or they're from Mexico or various countries in Latin America, and anytime I try to speak Spanish, they cannot help but laugh because it is just brutal. But, you know, I'm working on it. My Spanish needs a lot of work, though. I'll read a rough translation of this song, of the lyrics of this song in English. So it goes, sleep, my baby, sleep, baby, do. The boogeyman's coming and he will take you. Sleep, my baby, sleep, baby, do. The boogeyman's coming and he will eat you. So I don't know about you, but I am going to eat all of my veggies and I am going to go to bed on time after hearing that. Like, if my mother is going to sing that to me every night, or even if my mother's just going to sing it to me when I'm bad, I am definitely going to clean my room and I will go to bed on time. I will take my bath. Just do not sick this crazy, hairy, glowing, red-eyed monster on me. He's going to come and he's going to eat me. It's crazy. It's crazy what parents will tell their kids just to get them to shut the hell up for 20 minutes, you know? Now, the last couple creatures or cryptids or folklore tales that I want to talk about, they involve what is known as the Brujo Chilote and the Umbunche. The Umbunche was also known as the Invunche. So it's one of those things where, depending on the region that you're from, it could have a different name and could have a different description. And I kind of look at all of these things, whether they're real, whether they're you know, fake, folktale, urban legend, whatever they are, the idea is the same. I don't know if any of you have played telephone before. Telephone is the idea where, you know, like the telephone game, where everybody gets in a circle. We used to play this in my elementary. Everybody gets in the circle and you go, you know, the first person makes up some sentence, some statement, whatever it may be, you know, Tyler has a big butt, right? And then you say it to that person and that person whispers it in their ear and it goes all the way down the line. And then at the end, it could be like, Tyler said what, right? It's just like completely different. I'm keeping it PG because we're live right now. But the idea is that when you're playing this telephone game, when you're talking about these folk tales and these cryptid tales, people are passing these down. Excuse me. People are passing this down, you know, this tale, this story of the cryptid. And it goes, it's more intense than the telephone game. It's not 20 seconds in between each person. It's generations, right? And these people are passing these legends down generation to generation, which is really interesting because then you can see how things change when they're depicted in this way. And that's one of the main reasons why people started recording things and writing things down, is so that there was a written historical record that wouldn't change or would change less significantly. So getting back to the next subject, the Brujo Chilote are a semi-mythological group of Chilean warlocks. Now, I say that it's sort of mythological because there's actually some proven historical records about the Brujo Chilote. So from 1786 to 1801, a sect of warlocks formed a sect of male witches named the Righteous Province on the island of Chiloé, which is really interesting. Like, this is a real thing. So there's a lot of legend, there's a lot of folklore around it, but this is rooted in fact. And I always say that the best stories, the best tales, always have a kernel of truth. In 1880, a Chilote farmer by the name of Mateo Conyusar was brought to trial and testified that the society was real and their prized possessions, an ancient leather book of magic, and a bowl that allowed secrets to be seen, were hidden in a cave and they were guarded by a pair of vicious monsters. Included in Mateo's confession was the following depiction of his first visit to the cave. 20 years ago, when José Merriman was king, he was ordered to go to the cave with meat for some animals that lived inside. He complied with the order and took them the meat of a kid he had slaughtered. Just let that set in. I don't think they're talking about like a kid like a billy goat. I think they're talking about a child. Merriman went in, and when they reached the cave, he started dancing about like a sorcerer and quickly opened the entryway. This entryway was covered over with a layer of earth and grass, which kept it hidden. Under this, there was a piece of metal, which was known as an alchemy key. He used this to open the entryway and was then faced with two completely disfigured beings, which burst out of the gloom and rushed towards him. One looked like a goat, and it dragged itself along on four legs. The other was a naked man, with a completely white beard and hair down to his waist. Interesting. Now, remember, what I just read to you is actually written down in historical records. This guy was at a trial, and he was under oath. I don't believe that he was under duress. I don't know what kind of trials they had back, what was this, 1880? You know? Yeah, I feel like it wasn't like you put your hand on the Bible and swear, but I wasn't alive, and I'm not really a historian, so I don't really know. But I don't think that he was under duress. I feel like he made this, you know, like of his own volition. Now, when we look at his story, when we look at his, you know, recollection, his recounting of this, you know, encounter with these creatures, we look at the goat-like creature, and we can see that that would be a Chivato or a Chivato. The other is a really terrifying creature, which is the Imbunche. Now, both of these creatures, they were kidnapped or sold by their families at birth, forced to live with the warlocks for the rest of their days. So the idea is that these were once children. Now, just a fair warning, what I'm about to get into here, it really isn't for the faint of heart. The Imbunche was created in one of the most vicious ways I can imagine. And Mateo, again, this person that was at trial, he described the process as such. When the sect needs a new Imbunche, the Council of the Cave orders a member to steal a boy child from 6 months to a year old, so not quite infancy. The Deformer, a permanent resident of the cave, gets to work at once. He disjoints the arms and legs and the hands and the feet. Then he begins the delicate task of altering the position of the head. Day after day, and for hours at a time, he twists the head with a tourniquet until it has rotated through an angle of 180 degrees. So specifically, that's until the child can look straight down the line of its own vertebrae, its own spine. Now, one last operation remains. At full moon, the child is laid on a workbench, lashed down with its head covered in a bag, and this procedure, it requires a specialist, and the specialist cuts a deep incision under the right shoulder blade, and into the incision of the right shoulder blade, he inserts the right arm and sews up the wound with thread taken from the neck of an iwi. When it has healed, the imbunche is complete. So if you're looking at our live show right now, you can see how the imbunche is depicted. And it looks like a really terrifying monster. Most of the time it had one leg behind its neck, which was really creepy. There's another picture that'll pop up in a minute here, which depicts the imbunche from a forward angle, which is really interesting. And if you're not listening to this live, if you're listening to this when we upload this later next week after our next live episode, we have some of these photographs at our socials, on our social page. So at the end of the episode, I'll shout out our socials and you can check those as well. And you should just check them out anyway because, you know, we are hilarious and our social feed is amazing. Now, going back to the Brujo Chilote, some accounts tell of these warlocks applying a magic cream over the boy's back, and they cause thick hairs to grow, and then they also split his tongue to create a forked, snake-like tongue. Now, the imbunche and the chivato are both confined underground or within the caves. They're never clothed nor taught any schooling or speech, and they're fed mainly on human flesh. Because of this, these twisted humans, they turn to monsters, and they're said to utter grunts and guttural cries. And remember, these things are guarding the caves. Just imagine this twisted, deformed creature running at you, full speed, grunting and screaming. Oh, God. I can picture it in my mind. Now, when we talk about the imbunche and the chivato, we obviously need to talk about the warlocks, the Brujo Chilote. Now, they were said to be feared by many on the island, and most believed that these warlocks possessed magical stones that held the power to curse their enemies. The legends also say that the warlocks performed a ritual that involved slashing their victims repeatedly, magic supposedly being inflicted at every cut. And again, I can picture that in my mind. These warlocks sound like brutal, brutal people. In addition to this, the Brujo Chilote were also said to have fashioned waistcoats out of recently deceased Christians or using the flayed skin of a virgin woman. This coat had the ability to allow the wearer to defy gravity, and in addition, it gave off a faint glow, allowing the warlocks to conduct nighttime expeditions. So if you're looking at our live show, you can see right now, this image shows the imbunche guarding something. Looks like it's standing on the, you know, it's looks like it's you're inside a cave facing out, and this thing is guarding the entrance. But from a forward angle, you can see that it walks on its hands and one foot as one other foot is put up in behind, which is really interesting and also very terrifying. I would not want to run into one of these things. There is so much to unpack about the Brujo Chilote and the imbunche, And if you're interested in reading more, there is an absolutely incredible article on SmithsonianMag.com, and I'll link it in the episode description when this episode is uploaded. But for now, that's pretty much everything I have about these really intensely frightening, absolutely mystifying creatures, cryptids, folklores, whatever you want to call them. But, you know, like I said at the, you know, near the beginning of the episode, there has to be something about these. There has to be some kernel of truth, because how do all these different people throughout history see the same thing? Whether or not it's quite to the extent that this is, you could look at it as the Mbunche are, it could be just boys that were abandoned by their families that lived in caves and had no other life, right? And maybe somebody saw something weird with their foot, like one guy just had some really deformed, messed up foot or something, right? But there has to be something going on to inspire these. And if you look at our first episode where we talked about the Hmong refugees and how they experienced this spirit killing them in their sleep, and that inspired the Nightmare on Elm Street, you can see that in a lot of these folk tales or cryptid sightings, there is some kernel of truth happening. There is something going on, which is really, again, like I said, which is really what fascinates me about these things. So I guess that's the end of the episode in terms of cryptids and folklore, but I have a couple exciting announcements about upcoming things. First off, join us on Thursday, October 28th for our annual Halloween party. We'll have drink recipes, a Halloween listening party, and a virtual haunted house tour in the Discord server. We'll close off the night with streams of some classic horror films. This year, the Slash and Cast Network is sponsoring the Brooklyn Horror Con, which takes place on October 23rd and 24th. The event features horror-themed vendors and artists, as well as several guests that have brought you the best movies and television that horror has to offer. Visit brooklynhorrorcon.com for more information. And lastly, join the Slash and Cast Network for our annual Halloween virtual convention streaming live from October 29th to the 31st. Visit the Slash and Cast YouTube channel or slashandcast.net to catch our segment and more great content from the rest of the network. Again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and checking out the show, and thank you so much for joining us this week. We're really excited to bring you another live episode every Wednesday this month, so hopefully we'll see you next week. This episode is produced by Death Hotel Creative, hosted by myself, Dr. Mystery. To view more and to grab your exclusive Cabinet of Mystery merch, visit us at notwhatwesay.com, check out our Instagram handle at Cabinet of Mystery, or our Twitter at Open the Cabinet. Please leave us a review if you enjoyed the show, and let us know what topics you'd like to hear in the future. You can hit us up either on the socials or at cabinetofmystery@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave us a voice message and appear in upcoming episodes, leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/cabinetofmystery. For sources on this episode, please see the episode description. And once again, thank you so much for listening, and please subscribe or follow for more episodes.